Well, hi there and welcome to the YM Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Shaw. The vision of this show is to educate and engage apostolic youth workers just like you as you educate, engage, and this week, drive or fly. It'll feel like the same, I promise you. Drive or fly a whole bunch of teenagers with so many suitcases to North American Youth Congress. That's right, it's Youth Congress Week, everybody, and we could not be more excited to see all of you in the Dome in St. Louis, ready to lift up the name of Jesus. And so we held back this episode for the youth worker, youth pastor that's in the 15-passenger van or leading a fleet of 15-passenger vans, or if you're lucky and from a bougie church, you got a coach bus with a driver, and you get to just hang out in the front seat. And when you get tired of listening to Gen Z worship music, if you're an old millennial like me, and you feel like you want to listen to something else, you can pop the AirPods in and you can listen to an episode just for you as you make your way down to North American Youth Congress. Speaking of which, if we haven't had a chance to meet yet, during the day on Thursday, I'm going to be at the YM booth, and I'd love the opportunity to get to know you, whether you listen to the YM Leadership Podcast or my other podcast, The Restorationist. I'd love the opportunity to get to know you a little bit better and get connected. So that'd be a lot of fun. You'll find me there on Thursday. Well, today's going to be a really important show, but I want to say before I jump into the content that if this episode means something to you, impacts you, I need you to text it, share it on social media. When you get into the dome, I want you to just go ahead and airdrop it to a bunch of people in your row. Doesn't matter if you know them or not. Just tell them you need to listen to this. And that will help us grow the show as we promote apostolic leadership resources all over the world. Well, we got an important topic to talk to you about today. How not to be offended. That's what I want to talk to you about today. I want to talk to you about how you can navigate the crazy, chaotic highs and lows of youth ministry, whether you serve junior hires, high schoolers, or you're in the world of young adult ministry, helping hyphens exit their youth years into adulting, and all of the crazy twists and turns and challenges and identity crisis that can happen on all of these stages. I want to help you serve in such a way that you can serve selflessly and personally without being offended. This is so important because I have been young, and let's be honest, compared to a lot of you listening right now, I'm a little old. I am. I'm not as old as most, but I'm probably a whole lot older than a bunch of you listening right now. So I'm going to be the old guy on the podcast and say, you want to know what? Youth ministry is one of those unique things where it is easy to get offended. And I was thinking about this in show prep because I was like, if I'm going to show people how not to be offended, and I guess I've been preaching since I've been 17. I'm 38 now. So yeah, it's been a minute. And at 19, I became a youth pastor. One of the things I noticed is that youth ministry seems to be one of those environments where it is easy to be offended. In fact, I am less prone to offense or the emotional turmoil of getting my feelings hurt now that I have exited youth ministry than, you know, pretty much any other time in my ministry career. And I was thinking about why. Why does it seem like as I'm talking to youth leaders and youth workers all around the world as I travel and speak and do training a lot now, why does it seem like youth ministry is a place where offense can happen? And it's really important we talk about this because, as I said, I've been young and now I'm a little old, and I have watched so many of my peers exit the truth. They have either stopped believing in God, they've left ministry leadership, they've left Christian leadership, or they've abandoned apostolic doctrine and apostolic lifestyle and have picked up, unfortunately, a false gospel and a compromised life. When I survey those relationships that I've lost and those lives that have crashed and burned, there's one constant that seems to just come up in every circumstance, as varied and as unique as the circumstances were and as varied and unique as each leader was. Offense was the thing that took them out. So why does it seem that offense seems to hit people that are serving in youth and young adult ministry more than, at least in my experience, other aspects? And again, I'm gonna put my old guy hat on right now, and hopefully this doesn't hurt your feelings. I think one of the reasons why offense comes a little easier in youth ministry is because those serving in youth ministry are often young. As I look back at the person I am nearly two decades from my first youth service as the youth leader, my skin is so much thicker. Time, maturity, being intentional about studying emotional intelligence, emotional resilience, learning biblical principles about putting my life and emotional priorities in the right place has helped me grow and evolve as a leader. I think one of the reasons why offense can come so easily in youth ministry is that many of you serving here are young, and unless you have been very intentional about guarding your heart, you don't have many calluses on the exterior of your emotions yet that can protect you from the sharp words and the harsh criticisms that sometimes come in youth ministry. And so I feel like the first reason why offense is a struggle for many that serve is because those that serve in this area of church life are in the process of building their own leadership and emotional resiliency on the job while being battle-tested. Number two, people seem to be less filtered in their feedback with younger leaders and more passionate in their feedback that they give towards student ministry, youth ministry in the church than other places. And I understand that. I understand that because I'm a dad now. My son is 10, and he'll be joining the youth group in 2 years. And I'm very passionate about the worship environments that he is a part of, because there's nothing more precious and valuable to me than my son. Now I can be pretty chill. I mean, I'm as I've mentioned on this show and other shows, I've got a type A kind of bent in my personality, but I know how to be filtered and be fairly chill with a whole lot of different things. But when it comes to my family, I'm enormously protective. And one of the reasons why I think offense can come towards youth workers is because everyone watching you serve and lead the next generation of apostolics is so passionately invested in their spiritual success that they are willing to provide sometimes sharp and emotionally laden feedback to youth leaders and youth workers. And it's so it seems like they're less filtered. And I think part of, and we'll get to the mechanics of navigating this in just a moment, I think part of how we protect and guard our hearts is when we get feedback from mom or dad or grandpa or grandma or an aunt or an uncle in the church or just a concerned elder, and it feels like the criticism is a little harsh. One of the ways that you're going to cope with that is by reminding yourself they're not against me. They're just passionate about their children. They're not against what I'm doing. They're passionate about the success, the spiritual success of their grandchildren or the future of this local church. And so if you can find a way to filter the harshness through the lens of they're saying this because they care, that can actually be a tremendous motivator and provide for you as a leader, if you handle it right, a tremendous opportunity to build a healthier relationship with the person who's currently criticizing your last decision or your latest event or a change you've made in the youth service. Because you can find common ground with them because you both care about what is taking place. The third and final reason why it seems like offense happens in youth ministry is because Jesus said it would happen. Jesus didn't say offense would happen in youth and young adult ministry because that's a fairly modern invention, but Jesus said that offenses are going to come. In this life, we're going to deal with trouble and tribulation. We're going to deal with persecution. And at times, we're going to deal with criticism. And we're going to have to learn how to navigate failure. We're going to have things not work out. We're going to have people abandon our youth ministry, abandon the relationship with God after we have selflessly served them, just like they have abandoned Jesus, or just like Paul's disciples abandoned him in the book of Acts during times of falling away and persecution in the church. Jesus told us that people are going to depart from the faith in the last days. There are going to be people that would not have the faith to continue their relationship with God. And if you really truly care for souls and you invest in relationships, when people abandon their relationship with God, it can sometimes feel like they have abandoned you too. And that can hurt. So offenses can come in youth ministry leadership from all sorts of places. It can come from the people that we are serving. It can come from the parents and grandparents that may not understand methods or techniques we're using and provide feedback and criticism that can feel harsh. It can also come when young people backslide and abandon their faith and they walk away from the relationship with God. Offense can come from so many different places, and Jesus promised us it would happen. So, how do we deal with it? How can we live unoffended? How can we choose not to be offended when challenges, trouble, and criticism, and backsliding and abandonment come our way? I want to give you a few keys that I have learned along the way. Number one, ministry is personal, but you shouldn't take it that way. Ministry is unlike any other vocation on the planet. It really is. And I know lots of times we can learn from the business world and the corporate space on techniques, and all the leadership books that I have, for the most part, are written by people that work in the corporate world. But ministry is unlike anything in the corporate world. And sometimes it's even unlike the skilled helping space. So like counselors and doctors and coaches. Because when you're done 8 sessions of counseling with your counselor, then that's it. You probably don't ever really see them again. Or you see them once a month at their office. But you're not going to your therapist's house, but you'll go to your youth pastor's house. You won't go to your coach's house for a barbecue, but your youth pastor will pick you up from school and You know, you'll take them out to Chick-fil-A and get them a combo and get the mac and cheese, which we do not have in Canada yet, so pray for us. I really need Chick-fil-A mac and cheese in my life. But you'll go and it's so much more personal. It's not an episodic relationship where, like a counselor or a therapist, you'll see somebody 8, 10, 12 times, and then that's kind of it. You're literally going to be a part of a teenager's life. And if they stay in the local church, and if you stay in that local church all the way into their adulthood and building a family of their own, this means it's incredibly personal. This is why Jesus never says that elders and pastors in the church, leaders in the church, that's where I'm using the word elders here today. I'm not talking about age. I'm talking about authority. Why those that aspire to the office of an elder, he doesn't call them a merchant. He doesn't compare them to a physician. He compares them to a shepherd, because a shepherd would embed his life with the life of the sheep, and that's what a student pastor does. And so ministry is incredibly personal, but you cannot take it that way. You cannot take this personal. You cannot have your personal self-worth rise and fall on the success that you have in your youth group. You cannot allow your personal identity to become so intertwined with the students that you're leading that criticism from them, criticism from their family, or they backslide, they make mistakes, and then you feel responsible for their mistakes so much that you feel like a piece of you has died. Here's what you need to remember. When people make bad decisions, when they reject truth, they are not rejecting you. They are not rejecting your pastor. Even if in their explanation as to why they are leaving the church, leaving their belief in God, is you, they're not leaving you. They're leaving Jesus. They're rejecting Jesus. You've got to disconnect your personal identity from what we do. If we let our emotions become so intertwined with decisions others make for God, it will be very difficult and you will become offended and become bitter. And here's why that's dangerous. Number one, it could lead you to a place of where you feel like this is all futile and then you'll feel like giving up. Or it could lead you to become jaded so that you don't be open with the students that you're leading and you put up walls so that if somebody leaves the church, you take that so personally that you burn the bridge between the church and them and you and them, and so that they can never find a way back to God because you're so upset and so angry and you've told them how much they have hurt you because they've left the church. No, you can't do that. You gotta realize when someone backslides, when someone walks away from God, they're walking away from God. They're not walking away from you. You are just, I'm sorry to say this, but you're just a pawn in this process. You're valuable. You're using your gifts. You're important to the Lord, but ultimately you're not the chief shepherd. Jesus is. And so when people walk away from the relationship with God, do not make that about you. Understand they're leaving Jesus. And when you boundary your heart, when you boundary your personal sense of self and your personal sense of identity from the work that you do, you can love people selflessly. And this is so powerful. And it's so important that you learn to do this. Why? Because at some point, that teenager that left the church in the 10th grade, well, they're going to be a young adult. And they're going to be struggling. They may face big questions, or they may end up getting into a relationship and exiting university and college and planning on getting married, maybe even beginning a family of their own. And now that they have their own kids, they begin to think about the world and life in deeper terms. And they wonder if there is still a seat at the church for them, despite the fact they walked away. Well, if you choose to not be offended at what people do as they exit a relationship with Jesus, should they backslide, if you choose not to be offended by the harsh words they may say about you, the youth group, your pastor, Jesus, if you understand that this is simply the work of a sinful and broken person and you keep that door of communication open, they will have a way back. I remember I spent, oh my goodness, hours and hours and hours with a young person in my youth group. They played in our band and were such a help. But I began to see gaps appear in their life and spirituality and coldness kind of creep into their spirit. And I've tried to have kind of these gentle intervention conversations. And finally, one day, the individual just leveled with me and said, I don't think I believe in God anymore. I think all of this is fake. I think people are just in a room and they're getting excited, but all of this is crazy. Also, I've grown up in the church. I've grown up. I want to know what the world feels like. And if I don't like it, then I'll come back. And I remember leaning across the table and gently yet very directly saying, listen to me. Sin is so deceptive that you may think you can come back. But sin will take you further down a path than you ever think you could go. And it did. It led him down a path of addiction. And I remembered because I didn't push him away, even when he pushed me away and pushed Jesus away, and every time I saw him, and occasionally I would text him to say, hey, I want to know how you're doing. The times when he thought he was dying from drug overdoses, he would call me. And he would cry because he felt afraid. And now he's cleaned up his life and he's moving into a relationship and he's getting ready to be a dad. We've had conversations about church and how his kids need to be in church. And he said, you want to know what? That makes a whole lot of sense. Now he's not come back all the way yet, but he's making moves in the right direction. And the only way these conversations subsequent to him leaving the church could ever be so cordial and loving and friendly is because I had to make a choice that I was heartbroken and I was hurt at his rejection of the church, rejection of God, and even through his harsh words, his rejection of me as his pastor. But I had to choose to not get offended, to love him anyway, and to give that to the Lord. And because of that, there's still an open door. I wish I could say, if I can just be really vulnerable with you, I wish I could say I handled every situation like that. But I would say earlier in my youth pastoring years, I took things so personally. There were times that I didn't handle people's struggles very well. I made it more about me than I ever should have made it. And as a result now, it's going to take a whole lot more work for them to come back to God. And I have to bear some responsibility for that. Because I was too direct, I was too intense, because I was feeling rejected in the moment. And I bet you can probably identify with me a little bit on that. Maybe you've been there too. But here's the key. The key to living unoffended is to understand that ministry is personal. You're going to walk through the most important life-shaping moments in a kid's life as they become an adult. You're going to shepherd them through junior high, high school, college, the workforce, into adulthood. It is so deeply personal. But you must unravel your identity and sense of self from the work that you do so that when the offenses come, they won't stick. Number two, here's another way to live unoffended. It's to understand, and this is straight from Dr. Henry Cloud in his amazing book, Boundaries, which I recommend that you all read. And it's this: we are responsible to people, but not for people. You're responsible to be a youth pastor. You're responsible to be a leader, but you are not responsible for the outcomes of a teenager's or a young adult's spiritual health and spiritual life. You're responsible to teach. You're responsible to preach, exhort, reprove, rebuke, instruct in all godliness, just like Paul told Timothy. That's your job. But you cannot take responsibility for their own choices. We are responsible to do what God has called us to do. We've got to pray. We've got to pray for them. We need to teach. We need to be well-read and well-studied so that we can deal with the subjects that are relevant to the life of a 21st century student or young adult. We've got to equip ourselves to give strong, good, loving, biblical advice, but every person is responsible for their own actions. Now, here's what I've discovered. Sometimes when teenagers struggle, moms and dads and their exasperation look towards the church, and because they're scared, they've never been in this environment before, and they know they need help, they look towards the church and say, if the church would do this, then they would want to come to church on Sunday. If the church or the youth pastor or youth leader would do this, then maybe they would still want to pray or be involved in worship or not sit in the back or want to be involved in a ministry. I want you, and you probably can't say this to the moms and dads because they're in a vulnerable moment, but inside you need to reject. You need to reject those claims of responsibility. You are not responsible for the choices, good or bad. You are responsible to be a biblical leader and to do your best to create a thriving environment for teenagers and young adults. But teenagers and young adults are responsible for their own salvation. That's why the scripture says, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Now, I'm not saying that people can save themselves. We are, of course, are saved by grace through faith, by obeying the Acts 2:38 plan of salvation and then living a life of discipleship. But each teenager and young adult has got to take responsibility for their own salvation subsequent to their conversion. If they reject godly counsel, if they reject biblical leadership and teaching, then that is unfortunate. It is sad. We will pray. We will fast. And I'm going to say something that's really direct, okay? But that's their problem, not yours. That's their problem, not yours. Because you are responsible to, but not for. Understanding responsibility prevents guilt from robbing your passion when people make mistakes and they mess up their lives. Number three, and this is my final point, find outlets for your frustration and hurt. Find outlets for your frustration and hurt. It's going to be stressful. Oh my goodness. I did it for a long time and now I'm still involved in pastoral ministry, except now I've moved into kind of more of the family and adult space of pastoring. And I want to let you know the problems are fairly similar. It's just they get more expensive. But the problems are still the same with adults as you know, as with teenagers and young adults and even kids. And here's what I've discovered, and I wish I would have picked this up sooner, and so I hope you take the advice of the old guy behind the mic right now. I want you to find outlets for your frustration and stress and even hurt that you accumulate throughout ministry. You've got to, you cannot be so busy working for God that you do not take time for your own soul to find strength and fresh energy. You've got to fill your own cup. You cannot continually pour out and pour out and pour out and then not take some time to refill your own soul in the process, especially when your youth group has gone through a painful transition, or you've had some young people make poor decisions, or there's been some failures, or you've been rejected or criticized, and now you're dealing with some offense. You've got to find an outlet for all of that. And I want to give you four things. I want to give you four things that are healthy outlets for the frustration and stress and even pain of ministry. Number one, you need to pray. You need to take your needs to God in prayer. You need to talk to God about the offenses that you have accumulated in your heart or the frustration you're feeling about ministry. You need to take that to the Lord. You need to have real, open, and honest conversations with God. Your prayer time should not be just you listening to worship music, saying a bunch of hallelujahs and I love you, Jesuses, followed by long bursts of tongues. Though I think you should pray in the Holy Ghost every day. Don't quote me and say that I'm not saying that's good. You should pray in the Spirit every day, but you also should pray with your understanding as well, that prayer is an opportunity for you to really have a conversation with God about the things that you're feeling and facing in your life, your fears, your aspirations, your dreams, the stuff that befuddles you and has frustrated you working in student ministry. You need to articulate those to God. Cast your cares upon Him, for He cares for you, the Scripture says. Cast your anxieties upon Him, for He cares for you. Unburden the fear you have about this young person who's struggling, so that every time you talk to them, you don't feel pensive. Take the burden you're feeling over the young people that have left and the sense of failure, and bring that to the Lord. And ask for Him to help. You will find that if you start praying about the frustrations and stresses and defenses of youth ministry, your ability to cope with them and deal with them in a healthy way will exponentially grow, because prayer invites God into the thing that's bugging you. Prayer is an open door for the Lord to become involved in the areas of your life that you have invited Him into. Number two, you need to have some elders that you talk to. It would be really good for you to have some people in your life that know they're not connected to, they're not a Gen Z leader. They may not even be a millennial leader. Maybe they're a Gen Xer. Maybe they're a baby boomer. Maybe they do not know all of the ins and outs of student culture at the moment, but they have been shepherding people for a long time. And I want to let you know, people are people. I've been all over the world preaching the gospel, and I've been doing this now for, oh my goodness, nearly 22 years. Yeah, nearly 22 years. I've been involved in leadership and preaching, and I want to let you know that people are people. And while technology may change and generations may change, styles of dress may change, and we may be facing more complex social and moral issues than we ever had before, the fundamental basic issues of the human heart have remained the same since the fall of Adam and Eve, and also the pressure of shepherding people has remained the same as well. And so having some elders in your life that have developed thicker skin, they've worked and processed through offenses. They have developed strong mental and spiritual and emotional resilience. You need to have people in your life that you can go and you can talk to and get advice from them. You need the sage wisdom of an elder in your life that would have, that'll have the ability to correct your perspective if need be. They'll have the permission to let you know that, oh my goodness, I know this hurt and I know this was disappointing and I would have lost sleep about this. But as I'm hearing you talk, I'm hearing a little bit of bitterness develop in your voice. And I just want you to know that you need to be cautious about that. You need the voice of an elder in your life. Three, you need a circle of friends. You need some peers that are in ministry. You need people that have the ability to pour into your soul what you need when ministry drains it from you. I'm going to quote my friend Ryan Franklin. He's been talking to me a lot, and I know he talks to a lot of people about this, about having a life team. And that when you're in stressful situations and you feel ashamed, or you feel like you need some affirmation, or you feel like you come out of the office after talking with a parent and you find out that the teenager has got a secret addiction, and you just put your face in your hands when the meeting is over, and you just feel like a failure. You feel like you haven't done a good job, that you have somebody you can call, a friend, and say, hey, listen, I know I'm in the will of God, but it feels like I'm not in the will of God. I need some encouragement right now. I don't need advice. I need encouragement. Can you give me some encouragement? Because I could use some right now. And your friend is just able to pour some oil into that wound that has been kind of opened up from a stressful conversation. That's what a good circle of friends can do. They're able to pour into you the emotional and relational needs that are a part of your heart and part of your soul, so that you do not look for them from the people that you lead. You know, Jesus said something, and I've been reading a lot of Henry Cloud and John Townsend lately, and they have a unique take on the phrase, blessed are the poor in spirit, for they shall see God. And they say, it's really good for you to be a needy person. And you think about that as in contemporary leadership literature, that is not what we are trained to be. We're supposed to be independent and resilient. We're supposed to be, if you're a guy, then you're listening to this and you got all like the alpha male pressure on you, that you're supposed to keep your cards, you know, tattooed to your chest and never be vulnerable, to be invulnerable. But Jesus inverts all of that. And he says, no, you need to show weakness. You need to be vulnerable. You need to understand that you are incapable of handling all of the pressures of life and leadership and ministry on your own, that you do not have all the answers. You do not have it all figured out. And you need people to come alongside you and give you what you need. I guess ultimately, underneath these three things, prayer, elders, and trusted circle of friends, if we were to summarize that, a way how not to be offended as a youth leader is you need to have a humble spirit and a humble heart that is willing to be vulnerable and reach out when times get tough. That's willing to reach out and ask for prayer, ask for advice, and ask for encouragement. And the final thing on finding an outlet for the frustration of ministry is you need to have some hobbies. You have some things that you do for fun that are not at all connected to your work in the church. I've got a few. They're super dorky. I mean, they're probably guys listening to this that I mean, you got a safe full of guns and you go to a range, I think you're cool. Maybe you live in the country and you've got an ATV or a side-by-side, or you do some cool stuff. Like I know guys that work in kids and youth ministry. They're super fit, and they go rucking, or they lift heavy weights above their head, and they really enjoy that. I've never enjoyed those things very much. I mean, I try to do them so that I can live longer, but I am really into coffee. And everywhere I go, I find cool coffee shops. I read about coffee. I read about coffee machines. Why do I do that? It's a hobby. I learn about coffee varietals. I learn about where the best roasters are in North America, and it's Onyx Coffee Roasters in Bentonville, Arkansas. By the way, they're my favorite. I learn about their processes. I read about the way coffee is made, all that stuff. You want to know why I do it? I do it because it gives my brain a break. I'm really into notebooks and analog paper Bibles. I've got a couple of them. I could talk to you about the page thickness and the font and the goatskin leather on the exterior. And I've got a little pen collection, and I could talk to you about ink and what my favorite notebooks are. Why do I do it? Is it because I'm so passionate about coffee? Well, yes, I am. But I also do it because I know that my soul needs a break. My soul needs a break. Some of you, maybe you like to fish. Maybe you like to read fiction. Some of you are into art. Maybe you've got a green thumb and you love gardening or mowing the lawn. You've got those hobbies not just because you're passionate about those things, but because they give your mind a respite from the pressure of ministry. And if you don't have one, you need to find one. And maybe you're somebody that's high variety. And so you'll have a hobby for, 6 or 7 weeks, and then you'll find another thing to be super passionate about, and you drive your family crazy. But listen, if it keeps you grounded and it keeps you emotionally and spiritually healthy, then that's cool. Just whatever you buy, sell on Facebook Marketplace to save up for the next new thing that you're into. I cannot stress this enough. It is so important that all youth workers and youth pastors find something to do. I know my buddy Seth Boyd is like really super into coffee too, and he's really into cooking, and I love watching his cooking videos on Instagram. Now, he doesn't know I'm dropping his name in this podcast, and I haven't had a big like unpack the psychology of cooking conversation, but I've got a guess that it's a great way for him to unwind, and it's a fun thing to do. And that's why he makes what arguably looks like the most beautiful tacos that have ever been made and broadcast all over Instagram. But he does that to unwind. And so maybe for you it's cooking, maybe for you it's painting, but whatever it is, find something that you can do that is fun, that requires complete and total focus. So watching stuff on your phone does not count. You need to have something that requires your total focus, where you need to be active in some way so that you can give your mind a break. It doesn't replace prayer. It doesn't replace reading your Bible. It doesn't replace fasting, but it is still an important thing for you to do for your mind. Look, I get it. Youth ministry can sometimes be hard. I did it for a long time. You're dealing with the most vulnerable group of people in a local church. You're dealing with the people that are right now living in the craziest moment in human history, as everything that can be shaken is being shaken. And it seems like the enemy of this world is targeting this generation, and then you're tasked with shepherding them. You're young too, and it seems like there's lots of opinions. You wear your heart on your sleeve. You pour yourself out, and sometimes it feels like it doesn't work. And in those moments, you are tempted to pull back, to maybe be more guarded, maybe have more walls and defenses up. But you don't have to. You can wear your heart on your sleeve. You can lead with vulnerability, transparency, and unbridled passion for the next generation to be as apostolic as they can be. You can ride the waves of the highs and lows of youth ministry, and you do not have to let offense rob you of your joy. You can be unoffendable. Just make sure you understand ministry is personal, but you're not going to take it that way. Understand you're responsible to people, but not for people. And finally, find good, healthy outlets when frustrations and hurt comes your way. I believe in you. You can do this. You can rise above. You can be the old guy in the youth room a decade from now and be absolutely on fire to see the next generation excel, grow, and be all that they can be. Well, that's all of our show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, share this with a fellow youth leader or a friend, or airdrop it to a complete stranger at North American Youth Congress. And make sure on Thursday, if you get a chance, come by the YM booth. I'd love to have the opportunity to meet you, shake your hand, give you a fist bump, and let you know I believe in you and what you are doing matters. All right, well, have a safe rest of your trip. I hope you have lots of pit stops at McDonald's and Chick-fil-A, and you stay caffeinated all week long. We'll see you. God bless.